but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
How much beer are you drinking at college football games? Matt Brown, who writes a sports business column, found that the University of Wisconsin is number one in the country with revenue from alcohol sales at games. Who is selling the most booze at football games? Wisconsin is number one, and it's not close, Stephen. They have sold 255,122 beers so far this football season. That's $3,088,690 in revenue created from beer.
It's not shocking, is it?
Wisconsin's number one. Nebraska's number two. They're $1 million behind Wisconsin.
Good for you, Wisconsin. Good for you.
2.1 million. Tennessee had 1.5 million. LSU's at 1.4. A lot of Big Tens in here. Wisconsin, Nebraska, Minnesota, Michigan, Indiana. Indiana's at almost $1 million. You know who's not up there right now? Oregon and Oregon State. I also think it's interesting. He didn't study this, but I would be into this. Don't you think more alcohol gets sold at games if your team's winning? Or would you think it's if your team's losing?
Well, I think like per person, maybe it's more when you're losing, but are you filling the stadium
per
up?
Capita?
Yeah, per capita. Like, you know, Portland strip club per capita. But like if you're winning, maybe not as much drinking, but more people are consuming less.
I think the story, as I looked at it, because I looked at his rankings, and it basically said that the Big Ten has big football stadiums because there's more total sales. But when you look at, you know, per capita, I'm kind of wondering if Washington State is going to end up there. You know, like, you know, do you have a sneaky good, you know, team from somewhere else in the country who gets in there? I'll tell you who the sneaky good schools are per capita. And by the way, how about beer prices? Tennessee is getting $15.11 per beer. How about that? $15.11. You get the same beer at West Virginia for $9.98. Pays to be a West Virginia fan. Zachary Neal covers the Oregon Ducks, USA Today, Ducks Wire. He got hacked. Did you hear this, Stephen? Zachary Neal got hacked on his Twitter account. I want to bring him on here. He's going to talk about that and some other important stuff. Tell us what happened. Take us through the hacking. What happened with your Twitter?
I'll tell you, I was buying a lot of beers this past week just trying to get through all of the things that happen when you get hacked and you have to deal with Twitter support. You know, I would say if someone tells you, like your wife tells you to change your password or something because there's some fishy activity, maybe listen. And you won't have to deal with, you know, 3 or 4 days of endless trying to deal with Twitter support and bots and all of that nonsense. You know, I'm glad I got back on. I got back to my Twitter, but it was a nightmare, man. I don't wish it on my worst enemy.
Do you have a sense of what happened? Was it a password breach? Was it carelessness? Did you have your password written somewhere? What happened?
I'm sure it was probably carelessness, just knowing me, but I woke up on, I think, Thursday or Friday morning and had an email that my email account for my Twitter had changed, and it had locked me out, and they blocked, like, all of my other accounts and my closest friends, and so I couldn't get in. So luckily, you know, in this business, it's all about who you know, and I had a friend of a friend of a friend who was high up and knew someone that worked at Twitter, and they were able to get my case kind of to the front of the line, because apparently Twitter hacking like is not that important, and they said it could originally take up to 6 to 8 weeks to figure this thing out, but luckily it took about 5 days. So
hey, what are they after? What like, who's hacking you and what are they after?
Apparently they want to just show the world that I am a big cryptocurrency millionaire who buys Mercedes Benzes and new houses, and I don't know. It's all very stupid, and it shows you, unfortunately, how reliant we are on Twitter to get our news. Like, I felt like I was worse at my job for a few days because I just wasn't getting the breaking news alerts. I was late on some things because I didn't have my tweet notification set up. So, I don't know. I'm happy it's behind me for sure.
It is behind you. A trip to Iowa City is ahead of the Oregon Ducks, where they will be going to play Kirk Ferentz and the Iowa Hawkeyes. How big is this game? Because people in Iowa are saying, Zachary, that this is the biggest game, you know, in like a decade.
It's huge for Iowa, I'm sure. It's very big for Oregon. Not really in like the grand scheme of things, but I think just in the sense of telling us who this team really is. I think we both would agree that this team is good at the very least. Are they great? Is this a college football playoff contender? Not quite sure. You know, we thought that after the Penn State game. Then you see what's happened at Penn State since, and it's like, okay, that was that really that impressive of a win? I'm not sure. So we've seen against good teams, good defenses, this offense is more average than we thought it would be. So Iowa is a team that has a really good defense. They're one of the best in the nation. I want to see if Oregon can be a great team. I think, you know, baseline, I think they're a 9-3 team. You know, I think they're at least a 10-2 team. Can they be that 11-1 playoff contender? I think we're going to find out a lot this weekend.
The rankings are coming out tonight. I think Oregon's going to land somewhere around 8. I don't think people are going to be happy with that. They're going to see it as a slight. But, you know, Zachary, what are you thinking, and what is Dan Lanning saying about the reveal of these rankings tonight?
I mean, first of all, we know that Dan Lanning is not saying anything. He does not care about these rankings, nor should he. I think he cares about the games in front of him because they know that if they win every game left on their schedule, then they're fine. I think, yeah, somewhere between 6 and 8 is probably accurate. It'll be really interesting to see. I'm curious to see where teams like USC and Washington land, or maybe even if Iowa sneaks in there, because if Oregon can win those games and pick up some more ranked wins, then that's going to be really critical for their resume going forward. Right now, the best win on their schedule, you could argue, is against Northwestern. So it doesn't matter to me as much where Oregon is today, as long as it's not 10th or 11th. I think if they're in the top 10, they're fine. But I want to see the remaining teams on their schedule, where they end up, because they can really boost that resume going forward.
Iowa is interesting because they've got some big bodies. And you talk about going to Iowa City, Iowa, Kinnick Stadium, Kirk Ferentz coach team. You know, this is a real Big Ten test. Oregon has not been great at the line of scrimmage. I saw some problems in the Wisconsin game, a bunch of tackles for losses. Indiana dominated the line of scrimmage. How concerned are you, Zachary, that Iowa's going to win the line of scrimmage on Saturday?
It's somewhat of a concern. I wouldn't project that they will, but I know that's going to be where this game is won. If Oregon can dominate the line of scrimmage or at least even hold their own, I think they're fine. They have the skill position talent. They have the quarterback. They have the coaching, I think, to get the job done. But as long as the big boys up front, both on the offense and defense, are able to do their job, I think Oregon should feel pretty good.
I am thinking about other questions. Dante Moore. How healthy is he? Any concerns coming out of the last couple of weeks?
I think he's fine. I don't know how severe that nose injury was. I know he was bleeding quite a bit, but I don't think it was a broken nose or anything. Dan said right after the game that he was good to go. We saw him after the game. He kind of came in and interrupted Brock Thomas's press conference. And, he seemed to be in good spirits. So, Dan has been asked several times since that game, you know, how is he, what does he look like a few days or a week after the injury? Every time he said he's fine, he's playing well, he's good to go. So I don't think that his health should be a concern at all. Again, I just want to see what he looks like against a good defense. We've seen him have some consistency issues and struggle to get into a rhythm. So against a really good team, I think it's really important that Oregon's offense starts out hot. We've seen them struggle with that this year. They've had a lot of 3 and outs or 4 and outs on the first drive of their possession. You'd have to go all the way back to week 4 in the Oregon State game to see them score points on the first drive. So I think that's important in this game. And, I think his health is fine. I just want to see his ability to play winning football in this game.
I am, you know, any road game is dicey. I am like you, kind of looking at the offense, and I think at times I have thought, gosh, Will Stein's great. This offense looks great. They're moving the ball real well. They look like they can beat anybody. And there's been other times where they just kind of, they go into a little bit of a lull. And I don't know if they're taking a nap or if, you know, if schematically the defenses have figured something out. Like, did Penn State figure something out and everybody else is copying it? What do you think is happening when Oregon's going well versus maybe when they get into those ruts?
Yeah, it's a very confusing kind of subplot of this storyline so far, because when you look at the bad defenses that Oregon has played, they've kind of buoyed their stats and uplifted their stats for the entire season against those teams, scoring, you know, 69 points, 56 points, 55 points. And then against the good teams, the four good defenses they played, they're averaging around 21 points per game. I'm not sure what it is as far as the scheme goes. I know that Dante has not played perfectly in those games. The offensive line has struggled a little bit. I think this game is almost just as big for Will Stein as it is for Dante and for, you know, the Oregon offense. They need to prove that they can go up against these Big Ten defenses and have a game and show the complexities that we saw against teams like Rutgers, against teams like, you know, Oregon State or Oklahoma State. So I think it's a really big one for Will Stein to just kind of show what he can do. He's, as one of the quote-unquote top coordinators in the nation, he's going to have his name out there for head coaching jobs. I know he already has a little bit. This is one of those games where he can go out, and if he wants one of those coaching jobs, which I know he does, he can prove it a little bit, kind of show that, yeah, this is what I can do. This is what you might be hiring.
We are talking to Zachary Neal, USA Today, Ducks Wire, covering the University of Oregon football program. Look, this season, let's say they win at Iowa, or maybe they don't. Let's say, you know, that they've got one loss to give. Oregon at 10-2, Zachary, with the strength of schedule they've played, where do you put them in this playoff picture? Or is that part of the intrigue tonight, seeing where they are and kind of what they need to do?
Yeah, that's the big question. They're, you know, at 11-1, they're obviously in. That one loss to the number two team in the nation. 10-2 with the wins that they have currently, I don't know. That's why I mentioned earlier I really want to see where Washington and USC land tonight, because if you can, even if you lose, say, to Iowa this week, but then you beat a ranked USC and a ranked Washington on the road, then that 10-2 is a lot more impressive than if you, you know, eat an unranked Iowa, an unranked USC, and then a ranked Washington, stuff like that. So they still need to resume build a little bit more with a few games left in the schedule, but it's going to get a little bit dicey if you lose one more game. I know that for sure.
Yeah, I think they still get in, but I think you're right. Like, you know, if they lose by 21 at Washington or they lose to Minnesota at home and it's embarrassing, all of a sudden, you know, you're on the bubble instead of knowing you're in with two losses. Zachary Neal is with us. You mentioned Will Stein. Tosh LePoy does not come up often as someone who would get a job somewhere else. Do you feel like Tosh is in the fold at Oregon for the foreseeable future, or are all these coaches flight risks?
I think he's, you know, if you're a coordinator, a successful coordinator at one of the top schools in the nation, you're definitely going to be mentioned in some of those names. I think Tosh gets hurt a little bit by the fact that Dan Lanning is a defensive coach, and a lot of people think that maybe some of Oregon's defensive success should be attributed to Dan instead of Tosh. You know, whether that's true or not, I do not know. I just think that that's something that could hurt him a little bit when, you know, you've got Dan, a defensive coach, and the offense is great. Will Stein's going to get all the credit. I think that Tosh would be a good head coach somewhere. I'm not sure if he leaves this year or next year or when that may be, but I think that he does have aspirations of being a head coach. I would not be surprised to see him get that at some point.
The biggest question you have for Oregon moving forward, these last four regular season games, possible playoffs, where's the biggest question in your mind, Zachary Neal?
I think it still lies with Dante Moore. I mean, we had questions coming into the year. He answered a lot of them, and we have now realized that he answered a lot of those questions against four defenses. And against the good defenses, he struggled a little bit. So I don't have really many concerns that he's going to be back next year. I think we can kind of put that conversation behind us. I think he will return in 2026. Even that's still with him being among, you know, the top quarterbacks in draft boards for next season. I still think he's going to return. I just want to see how good he can be this year, how much he can put into play this year, and how far he can lead this team.
I am looking, too, at the defense a little bit. I just don't know what to trust, right? Because we thought Penn State was good. They're not. And then Indiana, I don't know if that surprised you, but Indiana came into Autzen Stadium. They won that game. It was decisive victory for Indiana. That was a knockout. They were better. And I keep wondering, like, was this just a case of maybe like a year earlier, Oregon had that kind of win against Ohio State, and then we find out it's a long burn, and, you know, Ohio State comes back. Do you get the sense at all that Oregon's pacing itself a little bit based on what they learned a year ago, or is that reaching too deep?
I like to think that that's a possibility for sure. I mean, it's fun to believe. I'm sure I was not alone in telling myself after that Indiana loss that, okay, this loss isn't the worst thing that could have happened because it's still early in the year. You get to see some of your warts, some of your faults, and improve on them. I think that Ohio State showed the blueprint last year that they can lose once, maybe even twice in a year, and still get hot at the right time and play their best football at the end of November and December. I'm sure Dan Lanning is teaching that to his team right now. Like, they know that they still have everything they want in front of them. I don't know about pacing themselves. You know, you go into every week trying to win. It's not like they're trying to lose that game for any reason, to maybe stay out of the Big Ten Championship, avoid one extra game. But I don't know. I still think this is a good team. I'm just not completely convinced that this is a great team yet. That's why I think we'll really find out starting this weekend and then over the next few weeks.
The way that the recruiting cycle is broken down for Dan Lanning, you know, I keep telling people, Zachary, that 2026 is the year where it lines up for him, especially if you know, with Dante Moore back, that's when these recruiting classes that he's had that are highly ranked, they blossom, right? It's not the first year of DeCorian Moore, it's the second year with him. And do you read that the same way? Is next year's team looking better to you because of that, or how do you see the future for Dan Lanning?
Absolutely. That's been one thing that I've been saying, you know, alongside you all time this year. Like, this, you know, in TV shows, they kind of have setup episodes to get you ready for the finale, whatever it is. This felt like a setup season to me, where they could be good this year, they can make the playoff, compete. Next year's the championship year, because we saw with Ohio State last year, they brought back guys, some of their best players, for one more ride. They wanted one more time, get everyone back as seniors or veterans and go make that championship game. Oregon's got that opportunity. I mean, we mentioned Dante Moore. We could have Evan Stewart back next year as a redshirt if he's back healthy and ready to play. You can get Mateo Uyunglele. You get Dylan Thienemann. Some of these guys, convince them to come back for one more year and go and make that championship run. It could be really special. And then, yeah, the young guys, just this 2025 recruiting class is maybe the most talented we've ever seen at Oregon. I mean, they already have several starters on there. I think it's only going to get better from here. The 2026 class looks really good. Some potential starters in there as well. So, yeah, 2026 is a year that I think is going to be really special.
All right, your one tip for our listeners on here's how you don't get hacked is what?
Two-factor authentication. Very, very important. I did not know what it was until a few days ago, and I wish I knew a lot sooner. If you don't have it set up, stop right now. Go do it. Thank me later.
All right, we're going to take a commercial break so everybody can set up. That's Zachary Neal, USA Today, coming back after the break. The Portland Pickles want on the show. Why do the Pickles want on the show, Stephen? We're going to find out next.